Welcome back to the Beer Truth Podcast. My name is Tom, and in this episode, we are back to the Beer Basics series. We are talking today about Pilsners, in general, the lager category, but more specifically Pilsners, Czech or Bohemian Pilsners, German Pilsners, American Pilsners, and also a little bit about what Americans have done to basically bastardize the style. So this is just another episode in an ongoing series, and we're going to start doing a little bit more specifically style stuff. So going to be some shorter episodes, but a little more in-depth on specific styles. And like I mentioned today, we're going with Pilsner. So this is a fairly long history when it comes to beer history, not quite as long as some other styles, but there is a lot of stuff to talk about with Pilsners, so this is kind of going to start to scratch the surface, but I'll have some recommendations later if you want to get more into it on your own. So Pilsners are lagers. Not all lagers are Pilsners. It's like the square and rectangle thing. The more you think about it, the more you can get confused. Just don't overthink it. Pilsners are lagers. Lagers are kind of the parent of the category, and Pilsners are a part of the lager category. Pilsners are generally the most drunk style of lager, and that gets into mass market beer and, you know, all the big companies, not only in America, but really all over the world. They're in every country. But let's start with the original, which would be Czech or Bohemian Pilsner, which was born in the town of Pilsen. And Joseph Grohl was the creator of the style. The first date that what came to be known as Pilsner was recorded was October 5th of 1842. And so Joseph Grohl was the first one, the first Bavarian, or the first lager brewer, to brew a beer that was a lot lighter in color, to brew a lager that was a lot lighter in color, like the pale ales of England. So, although he did start this, he was apparently a dick, and didn't last very long at the brewery. But he is widely recognized as the first lager brewer to accomplish that. So, Czech or Bohemian Pilsner, whatever you want to call it, generally pretty interchangeable terms. Bohemian, you don't see as much, but I think it's starting to, or has been kind of making a comeback as a descriptor, because it sounds cool and looks better on a label. I mean, even Sierra Nevada calls their Summerfest basically a Bohemian style lager. So the style can often use floor malted barley and is often decocted. And decoction is when you take off a portion of the mash, which is the grains that are being heated up and turned into basically beer oatmeal, getting the sugar out of the grain. So when you take a portion of the mash, remove it from the mash tun and heat that up and then return it to the mash tun, and that increases the mash temperature without necessarily boiling the mash. It's a very old method, a very traditional method, not really used much anymore. And now it's kind of a point of pride when people do use that, because it's different and it's inefficient and it's not the easiest way to do things anymore. But decocting is supposed to lead to kind of a deeper, richer beer. Some people say that they can taste and feel the difference when a beer is decocted as opposed to just a normal industrial process of today. But to me, it definitely ends up with some more flavor and deeper complexity, but it can also be a little bit sweeter for my taste. But Czech or Bohemian Pilsner often is considered a little bit slightly sweeter, maybe a little bit biscuity, lower carbonation usually than German Pils, usually a little bit more intense, more kind of floral, a little bit less bitter, generally a little bit darker color than German pils. If you are in America, some pretty classic examples of this would be Sierra Nevada Summerfest, Lagunitas Czech pils. If that's still around, I don't know if Heineken has killed it yet, but Lagunitas Czech pils was a pretty classic one. And of course, the original Pilsner Urquell, which is literally considered to be the original Pilsner. I believe that's what it translates to in German, Pilsner Urquell, original Pilsner. And that's still brewed in Pilsen. And in Czechia, Pilsner refers specifically to Pilsner Urquell. And other light lagers are called Švětlý Lezák. I think I said that right. But if you say Pilsner in Czechia, that is specifically Pilsner Urquell. So they often use Saaz hops, a bit richer on the mouthfeel, and a touch of diacetyl is not out of the question. So, and diacetyl being that kind of buttery, butterscotch kind of flavor, not out of the question for Bohemian Pilsner, and part of that goes back to the method of brewing this beer. But then we have German Pils, which is often called Pils as opposed to Pilsner, and usually it's a little bit thinner, a little bit lower bitterness. Some people think even kind of boring compared to a Czech Pilsner. I prefer the German Pils to Czech Pilsner. I like a little bit less sweet, a little bit less less malty, little cleaner, crisper. German Pils traditionally is going to use noble hops, which noble hops are Hallertau, Saaz, Spalt, and Tettnang. Those are all very specific European hops, and you know they've been adapted in America and called different things, but German Pils is going to be using those hops. And the hop usage is considered more delicate than Czech Pils, Bohemian Pils. Noble hops can be even a little bit spicy sometimes, kind of give you that impression, but very traditional, as well as the role that water plays in a German Pilsner. Germany has, I think, overall pretty hard water and can kind of give more of a little mineral edge or a mineral bite to the beer, as opposed to softer water in Czechia, which the harder water plays, it's a very big role in German Pils, especially with, you know, not a whole lot of things going on other than water, malt, hops, and yeast. There's not, you know, a bunch of random shit added to it. So those ingredients each play a pretty big role. And hard water is a trademark of German Pils. Pretty classic examples of German Pils: Bitburger, Radeberger. There's a lot of examples. Some of them have kind of gone the way of the mass market, but if you can find them fresh, a lot of those German Pils are pretty awesome. That leads us to the American Pilsner, which can be often done kind of in homage to Czech or German Pilsners. You can find it with legit noble hops. You know, plenty of times you'll see something with Saaz or Hallertau or whatever. American Pils can also be Americanized and bastardized and all kinds of weird shit going on. A lot of times hops that are far from traditional, which, you know, sometimes you got to work with what you got, and maybe you can't get whatever hops fresh enough and to make it worth importing German hops or German malt to put in your American Pilsner when there's so much grown in America. But at a certain point, if you double dry hop a Pilsner, is it really a Pilsner? I guess that's kind of, that perception's kind of up to the consumer, but it's pretty easy to overdo a Pilsner, and really kind of go outside the category of Pilsner. Dry hopping, to me, basically turns a Pilsner into an IPL, India Pale Lager. But if that's what the consumer wants, then I guess that's what the consumer gets. So, you know, some people take tradition and live by it. And some people take tradition, bend it over, and spank it with Citra and Mosaic hops. You know, it's, you're going to find a million different examples of a million different styles, and whether or not they're always accurate by, you know, certification or judging standards, I guess that's kind of the beauty of it, is you can do what you want, but it can get pretty confusing and pretty out of whack pretty fast. So American Pilsner, some pretty classic examples. Victory Prima Pils, North Coast Scrimshaw, Russian River STS, Firestone Walker Pivo, which is based on an Italian Pilsner from Birrificio, I think. And Italian Pilsner, you start to see popping up on boards, menus everywhere. And people are kind of like, well, what's an Italian Pilsner? What does it make it different? It's a newish trend. I mean, and newish, I mean, you know, the last 8 years or so, I think. And diving into Italian Pilsner and that whole thing probably deserves its own podcast, but I'm not going to get into that today. Other American examples, Half Acre Pony. If you listened to last week's episode, you would know Heater Allen, which is in McMinnville, Oregon. If you can find one of those, grab that one. That's a great Pilsner, and they're canning now, not just bottling. So things will stay a little bit more shelf stable, a little bit longer, but get it as fresh as you can. It's a great beer. If you haven't listened to that episode, go back to last week, round 14, and listen to Lisa Allen talk about Pilsners. It's a good conversation. Anyway, so Heater Allen, kind of a more traditional nod to the style. What most people think of when it comes to American Pilsner, American Lager, you obviously have the reigning champion, Bud Light. You got Coors Light, you know, Budweiser, Coors, Miller Light, which those are all adjunct lagers, which most popular beers, or most top-selling beers in America, you can actually find a list. This was from a March 18th article of this year, 2020, USA Today article. The top-selling beers in America by barrels produced would be Bud Light, Coors Light, Miller Light, Budweiser, Michelob Ultra, Corona Extra, although I bet that'll change, Modelo Especial, Natty Light, Busch Light. You get the picture on light beer. It totally dominates the domestic market. I think Bud Light was over 40 million barrels for 2019. If not there, then it's pretty close. That's a lot of beer. Light beer totally dominates the domestic market. And a lot of those brands are actually trending down in sales, while craft beer currently, I believe, is not as up as it has been, but I believe craft beer currently is very slightly up, which is encouraging. But, you know, these days, the last, 5 months or so, it's going to be hard to read any kind of stats and predict anything off of that. But so most of these light beers, American light beers, are really better classified as adjunct lagers. And by adjunct, I am not referring to chocolate and marshmallow fluff and peanut butter and adding all that shit to your beer. Adjunct lager is referring to using rice and corn or some kind of rice or corn product as part of the grist or part of the fermentation process to cut down on the amount of 6-row barley, or that's what it started as, because European immigrants tried using American 6-row barley and realized that it was kind of a disaster to try and use 6-row barley and then have a bright, sparkling beer which is what people were expecting when they think of their beer from their homeland. And 6-year-old barley was not really making that work. It made beers look kind of dirty and muddy and really unacceptable to, especially to European immigrants who were looking for a taste of home and who were also originally the overwhelming demographic target for European-style lagers like Pilsner. And so they found other ways to make it work, which, you know, helped beer get a little clearer. It let beers, it helped beers get to where they wanted without changing the flavor or making it heavy. It helped lighten the color as well as clear it up. And I believe to this day, Budweiser is around 30% rice. I don't think they confirm that anywhere, but that's the number I've seen thrown around, is about 30% rice. And Coors uses corn syrup, which they've confirmed. They claim it as a to help the yeast during the fermentation process, and so that they claim it's fermented out, and so there is no corn syrup at the end. But you know, everyone saw the Bud Light commercials in the Super Bowl, so it doesn't really matter what Coors says, because Bud Light's got this impression in everyone's head. But anyway, the point is they're using products to help achieve a certain goal that they're shooting for as that end product. And originally, that was for clarity, help beers look nicer without impacting them too heavily. And they also help lighten the flavor a little bit. And nowadays, it just kind of seems generic and bland. But blandness wasn't really the original goal, you know, 100 years ago, 100 plus years ago. And, but, you know, get the marketing team involved and everything changes. Rice and corn also, you know, very different products. They impart different flavors. You know, taste a Bud next to a Coors and they're pretty different. You know, some people try and do a blind tasting of it. If you know what you're drinking, you know, you can tell what it's, that it's different, but rice and corn impart pretty different flavors. And, or even if it's not specifically a big flavor, it can even be the absence of flavor. But, I mean, then think about Japanese rice lagers like Asahi, you know, those, or Asahi Super Dry. The point is to make it crisp and dry and clean and, you know, to a point non-offensive. Drink a rice lager next to an all malt beer and you got two pretty different products. So do something like that. Do your own little experiment, you know, explore these topics further. I mean, this episode barely scratches the surface on light lagers overall and Pilsner. So we'll go more in depth in future episodes in this series, different styles, maybe circle back to some things that go a little deeper into. But again, I encourage you, go get a lager, preferably not a dry hopped lager, and, you know, see how complex it is, or maybe unfortunately how boring it is, if it's maybe not your style or if it's just not interesting. You get a nice, well-crafted Pilsner, you can really get something out of it. You know, a lot of places are starting to catch on that drinkers don't always want a sour smoothie milkshake IPA. And, you know, I joke about that a lot, but a nice, easy, clean, well-done craft Pilsner is a beautiful thing. And, you know, on social media, it's Bierstadt Lagerhaus and the Slow Pour and, you know, all these things. But a lot of these ones that are doing it really well are doing it out of a respect for tradition. And it's a very different thing than just drinking a bottle of Budweiser. It's a very different thing. And it's pretty interesting. When you can start getting more into lagers, it's a wonderful world ahead of you. They can be light, dark, weak, strong, sweet, rich. The world's really your oyster when it comes to craft lagers in general. And It may seem like it when you watch ads on TV, but the world of lager is so much bigger and better than Bud, Miller, Coors. You know, there's a lot to explore, so go explore it. If you're a fucking nerd like me, I would encourage you to do your own reading about this stuff. The best book I have found so far for beer knowledge, without being dry and boring and just like a dictionary, is The Beer Bible by Jeff Allworth. It's a great read. I really enjoy it. I look back at it a lot and kind of clarify things if I have any questions or want to look something up specifically. Also, thanks to Jeff Allworth, I found a book called A Brief History of Lager, 500 Years of the World's Favorite Beer. The author of that is Mark Dredge. He's a, I believe he's English, beer writer. He's won a bunch of awards for his writing. I just started reading that one last night, but I'm beer nerding pretty hard these days. If you're interested in going a lot more in depth and, you know, getting the book for it, there's a lot of books out there. Those are two I like, Beer Bible and A Brief History of Lager. Pretty interesting stuff. So there's just a lot to discover, a lot to learn. If you're into it, go for it. I encourage you to go further in depth because there's a lot to learn. So that's it for this one. Next week will be, should be another interview. I'm working on getting one set up. And then back to beer basics. Might do something more specific. Probably do another little style focus like this. But yeah, that's it for this one. If you like this, let me know. Comment, message me, whatever. Leave a review. Rate the show. That would be what I, either rating or commenting on the show, I would appreciate that the most. Yeah, helps helps advance the show, helps build the audience a little bit, and that's what we're trying to do. So follow me on Instagram, beertruth.podcast. You can like the show on Facebook, subscribe on any of your preferred podcast platforms. And till next week and the next round, cheers.